This podcast is brought to you by Windsor Management Insurance Brokers.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
This is Evenings on FNR, your voice of football here in Australia and right around the world. I'm your host, Louise Taffer, and there is plenty on the agenda tonight to talk about, including an update on the expansion process. And we are now down to just six teams. We'll also be catching up with Team 11's Matt Windley. On the Socceroo front, head coach Graham Arnold will treat the opening months of the A-League as a nine-round audition for his Asian Cup squad, plus a deeper look into the Melbourne Derby ahead of this weekend's big A-League opener. Joining me, though, in the studio is Nick DiBano, who has a fresh fade.
Thank you, Louise. I didn't expect that one to be coming, but good evening to you. It's been a very exciting day within the news of Australian football, within the world of Australian football. The expansion race continues to hot up. We've gone from 8 to 6 with Western Pride, Ipswich and Wollongong dropping out of the race for the two expansion spots. It leaves now only We're Team 11. We'll speak to Matt Windley a little bit later. Maurice Pacetto's Western Melbourne group. Also, the Southern expansion, Southwest Sydney, Macarthur, South Melbourne and Canberra.
Yep.
They're still hanging in there. Now they've suddenly, all of a sudden, they're now hot favourites to get one of those A-League licences, which is very exciting. And especially if you, Louise, a Canberra native, exciting to see that now not just have a W-League team, but an A-League team as well.
Well, we'll see what happens in the coming weeks. Of course, FFA has said they are looking to stay well on track for the inception of 2019-2020. We'll see what happens with that. Obviously, there's been a bit of discussion around that the deadline might be pushed back. We'll get plenty more, though, from Team 11's Matt Windley in the coming show. Nick, I believe, though, you have the latest news headlines.
I sure do. And look, as we said before, the FFA has announced that Wollongong Wolves and Ipswich Pride will not be considered for this round's A-League expansion. The eight A-League bids have now become six, and means the next two A-League sides will come out of either Victoria, New South Wales, or the Australian Capital Territory, or known as ACT. The FFA want to take further negotiations with the remaining bids with Southern Expansion, Macarthur, Southwest Sydney, Western Melbourne, Team 11, South Melbourne, and Canberra. The FFA will present finalised plans for expansion at the next meeting of the FFA board, held soon after the FFA AGM in November. Elsewhere, Wellington Phoenix have signed two players on the eve of the season, 17-year-old Callan Elliott, formerly coached by former Wellington player Paul Eiffel, and 28-year-old Ruben Way from Heidelberg in Victoria's NPL become the newest additions to the side. In W League news, the Newcastle Jets have finalised their squad for the upcoming season by signing US goalkeeper Britt Eckerstorm. And Eckerstorm played 13 matches for the Jets last season and also played for the Portland Thorns in the NWSL. The A-League boss, Greg O'Rourke, has named Zlatan Ibrahimovic and Fernando Torres as two of the main targets in the January transfer window.
Get out.
Well, it's apparently Fernando Torres was exceptionally close to signing for Sydney FC before signing for Tucson in the J-League, and that's all according to O'Rourke. Tucson are currently in the relegation battle, and should they go down, it pulls a trigger in his contract. It also believes that Zlatan has hinted at a move abroad, and there'll be around $1 million available in the marquee fund after allocating those funds to Keisuke Honda and Samantha Kerr. But in saying that, Zlatan Ibrahimovic has got offers to potentially go back to AC Milan as well. So they're going to have some hot property for those A-League teams and a bit of healthy competition. I guess we'll see what happens.
No, I don't read anything into that. Do you? Like, I mean, this is almost the same thing as what was going about only a couple of months ago about Andres Iniesta.
Yeah, well, look.
Where did that get everyone?
Yeah. Well, Torres was close. That's what we've heard. It was almost, there was actually rumours that, you know, that he's profile was already on the Sydney FC page at one stage, and before they actually signed Adam Lafondra, I don't think that they will be able to get Torres to come back. But there obviously are, you know, other marquee spots available from some other A-League clubs. I think Zlatan's a bit too far-fetched. I think if he's actually going to go anywhere, he will end up at AC Milan because he's expressed his intentions to potentially return to Europe. I think that would be a real big move for him to get him a last swan song, especially at a club where he's already played for, a club which is close to his heart in Milan. I don't know if a move to the A-League at this stage of his career is too appealing. At around 6:15, though, Louise, we'll be joined by Newcastle Herald's James Gardner to preview Newcastle Jets' upcoming season. And at 6:45, I believe, we'll be speaking to Matt Windley from Team 11 about their expansion process. And a little bit later, a former football boss joins us, Tony Pignata, the CEO of Perth Glory as well to chat about their upcoming game against the Wanderers and what's planning to be a very exciting season for the Glory this season.
Indeed it is, and we are just 2 days away from the start of the A-League. Are you a little bit more concrete as to who is going to take out the title, who is going to be the minor premier, and who is going to get the wooden spoon?
I am going to say, look, if I'm going to say anyone's going to win the title this year, I'm looking more towards Sydney FC or Melbourne Victory. I haven't been able to split them just yet. I'm more waiting. Got to give it a few weeks. You've got to give it at least, you know, 4 or 5 rounds to start to sound out how they go. But obviously, as we know, it's a long season. We saw a couple of years ago, Adelaide United lost, I think, didn't win their opening 7 or 8 games, ended up winning the title. Victory finished 4th last year, ended up winning the league, and Musket was almost sacked. You never know. It's the beautiful thing about football. Anything can happen. And I'm really excited to see how it all goes down. But for the wooden spoon, I'm still going to stick with it. The Wellington Phoenix is going to be the unlucky one out of what's a very competitive A-League this season. I think that a lot of the other teams have improved, but they just haven't improved in the similar manners to maybe one of some of those other sides that did, that missed the finals, a.k.a. the Perth Glory and Central Coast Mariners.
And before we go to a quick break, who has been your favourite signing so far across the league?
I can't say no to Keisuke Honda. I am so excited to see him play. Being an AC Milan supporter, I've watched a lot of Keisuke Honda through his 3-4 seasons at the Rossoneri, and I'm very excited to see him come play here for Melbourne Victory, you know, considering he was at the World Cup along with Ola Toivonen, scoring a goal and playing a big part for Japan off the bench. I think he's going to be one of, if not the best signing the A-League has seen. We've had Alessandro Del Piero come and he had a great impact, but he was at 38. Honda's still at the prime of his career. Might not be at the same level he was when he was playing for Cesca Moscow Milan a couple of years ago, but he's still very capable. And I think he's going to draw a lot of big crowds. I'm so excited to see what goes down at Marvel Stadium this weekend against Melbourne City. It's going to be raucous. I think we're going to get a sellout for that one as well.
And our derby debate to come in the second hour of the show. But for now, we're going to take a quick break. And coming up is James Gardner.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
This is Evenings on FNR and you're with Louise Taffer and Nick DiBano. And remember, you can get involved at any time by giving us a call on 03 99 44 99 99, or you can tweet to us at FNR_radio. Well, the Newcastle Herald's James Gardiner joins us now. James, thank you so much for coming on the show.
My pleasure.
Firstly, we'll get to the big news. You broke it early this morning. The Jets' 20-year-old defender, Johnny Katrumbas, will take some time away from the game after devastatingly being diagnosed with cancer.
Yeah, I mean, shocking news to find out late last night that, yeah, young Johnny Katrumbas has stage 1 thyroid cancer. He had an operation on Monday to remove his thyroid. The early indications are that they've got it early and that he will receive treatment and things will be okay. But certainly in terms of his football career is on hold at least for the next month or two. And then, of course, it will determine on how much treatment he needs and how much ongoing support that's required. When you have your thyroid removed, it can affect your balance and your fitness and your diet and a number of things. So he will certainly need some medication once he gets the all clear. And it'll be a matter of time before, I guess, we know whether he'll be back playing in the A-League and certainly doing a job for the Newcastle Jets. He was certainly trained up until last Friday and appeared to be healthy, but he did detect a lump at the bottom of his throat a couple of weeks ago and mentioned it to the Newcastle Jets staff. And then being cautious, they sent him off for scans and, of course, it came back with the tumour there. So fingers crossed, everything's okay. He's a lovely young kid and certainly a very handy young footballer. He played right fullback in the grand final. So fingers crossed that he'll be back sooner rather than later.
James, it's Nick here. And is there any immediate replacement you could see potentially starting in that right-back position heading in for match day one? Will we see Daniel Georgevski shift over to the right, maybe even a Nick Cowburn starting this weekend?
Yeah, I mean, they've got a couple of options. That's the beauty of the squad that Ernie Merrick has recruited. He's always very big on recruiting versatile players, and they've got quite a number of options there. They could use, as you mentioned, put Daniel Georgevski across to the right and play either Ivan Boitsa or Lockie Jackson, who are both natural left-sided players. Nick Cowburn could simply come in and play right fullback. He played the majority of his A-League games at right fullback. Or even they did train at one point last week with Lockie Jackson playing as a right fullback, even though he's naturally a left-sided player and has spent most of his time in the centre of defence. So they're a bit fortunate in that area. They've got a bit of depth there. If I was to take a punt, I would suggest that he might go with either Voitsa or Jackson, and move Daniel Dzhodzewski across to the right. Nick Cowburn now pretty much penciled in as a midfielder more so than a fullback, but he could certainly do a job. So and it's just a late disruption. I mean, they were gearing towards Johnny Kitrubas playing right back up basically until last Friday, and since then, I guess things have been turned on their heads.
And James, tell us about how the squad's shaping up this season. Obviously, some grand final heartbreak for the Jets, but still in a very good position to once again give themselves every opportunity to win the title this season. How's the squad shaped up? And has Ernie, do you believe, used that preseason time effectively to get the best out of his squad?
Yeah, definitely. In terms of the preseason, it's been one of the best in the club's history. A lot of people questioned the Jets in that they weren't very active in the transfer market, but they didn't really have to be. They retained 10 players from last year's grand final side. They have brought in four selected players, I guess you'd call that. They brought in Jair, a Brazilian who played in China last year. He arrived about a month ago and was pretty underdone and was a bit disappointed with his conditioning, but he's really got up to speed nice and quick. I expect him to start. He's not your typical Brazilian. He's not really a creative sort of flary type, luxury type player. He's more a go at play, run at defenders and get in the box. And he's got a rocket right foot on him. Matthew Rydenton is possibly the other big signing in terms of experience. He's obviously come across from the Wellington Phoenix, and he will start most likely in the absence of Ben Kandorowski on Saturday in midfield. And the other interesting one is Kane Sheppard, who they picked up from the Victorian Premier League club, Avondale. And he looks like a ready-made A-League player, to be honest. I've been really impressed with him. He looks comfortable, he looks confident, he makes good runs. And I guess the final piece of the puzzle was Mitch Austin, who they got from Melbourne Victory. He's coming back from a knee reconstruction, but already he's clocking something like 34, 35 kilometres an hour at Jets training on their GPS. So they've got a few different weapons there, different styles of players. So on that front, it's been very good. And the other big in is Ronnie Barks is back, fit, firing. He's had 12 weeks pre-season. And, geez, he looks ready to set the league alight. He's the one for mine that I think we saw a glimpse of what he could do in that opening three rounds last year. And then, of course, he had that horrible injury where he broke his ankle and dislocated his ankle and was out for 5 months. He made it back in time for the finals, but he had a pin in his ankle at the same time and just restricted and wasn't quite the same player. That pin's gone. He's been training for 12 weeks and he's red hot.
And speaking of red hot, how good has it been to retain the likes of Dimi Petratos?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there was a question mark leading into the finals midway through last season that Dimi might have gone in January. That didn't eventuate, and then everyone was thinking at the end of the season, oh, well, he's gone to a World Cup. Let's see if he picks up a club in Europe. But not only has he stayed here for this season, he signed a three-year extension only a week or so ago. So he's really reveling under the way Ernie Merrick plays. So he's got a lot of freedom. He has got some responsibility. He's got a lot of freedom, and Ronnie Vargas and Roy O'Donovan combined last year, you'd like to think that there's brighter things to come. Of course, I still think he wants to go to Europe, and if the right deal came along, there's no doubt that that will eventuate. But, he's in terms of Australia, he wants to stay in Newcastle. He's comfortable here. His wife's about to have their second baby in the next few months, so he's pretty settled.
And, James, we know that Roy O'Donovan and Joey Champness are going to miss significant parts of the season due to suspension and injury. Who could you see leading the line during that period of time? We know Jair isn't necessarily a natural number nine, but we've seen, as you said, Kane Sheppard is ready to go in the A-League. Would you see Ernie Merrick going with the import or potentially throwing a bit of a spanner in the works with Sheppard?
Yeah, potentially either of those two, or even Jason Hoffman. He's basically been reinvented in the last 6 months. He started out as a striker in his teenage years and played for the Young Socceroos as a striker, but was pretty much shifted to a right back when he was at Melbourne City and played the majority of his near 200 games at right back. But he scored 6 goals last year, pushed forward more in a wing role. But he's been starting certainly at the point. And the way Ernie Merrick plays with his front two, they play fairly narrow. They don't play as general wide players. They don't tug the sideline as such, but he encourages them to come inside and to rotate. And I think you'll find a mix of those three. Dimi Petratos will definitely start on the right. Ronnie Vargas will definitely be the number 10. And I think initially he'll go with Jair and Jason Hoffman as the other two, and they'll just switch and move and rotate and play pretty narrow. And I think that's the way he's going to try and pull defences out by not really restricting guys in the areas they can move in. He wants them to be unpredictable, for want of a better word, and to pull the defence, I guess, apart and not make it easy for the holders as well.
And, James, what can we expect from Ernie Merrick in this week's intriguing opener against Wellington Phoenix?
Yeah, he's pretty confident, to be honest with you. He likes to, you know, in the past, he's liked to keep things generally close to his chest and not be too negative or not be too positive. But, outside of the Johnny Katrumbas late setback, I mean, things have gone to plan. They've got virtually a fully fit squad. They've had good pre-season. They went to China initially and then went to Spain. They had a good win against Western Sydney Wanderers a fortnight ago, 4-0, and they looked like they scored 6 goals. So things have pretty much ticked along as he's wanted. So he'll go over there confident. He'll go over there looking to attack. He won't try and get a draw. They'll play that entertaining front foot football. They'll probably be exposed a little bit at the back at times. They will take some risks, but they've got some speed in those fullback areas and some experience in Nigel Bugard and Nikolai Topol-Stanley to try to cut off any counter-attack that we might see from the Wellington Phoenix. So they'll be definitely going there for a win, and we'll be disappointed if they don't get one.
And, James, I mean, the whole league has really strengthened this season. Where do you see the Jets finishing?
Oh, but if they play like they played against the Wanderers the other day, I can't see how they won't finish in the top four. I think it will hinge on this opening period when Roy O'Donovan is suspended for the opening 8 rounds and Joe Champness is coming back from injury. Where are the other goals going to come from? In the first 6 weeks, they've got 4 away games and the 2 home games are against Melbourne Victory and Sydney. So that first period is really important. If they can get off to a decent start, continue to score goals, And then you have Roy O'Donovan coming back in December and then Joe Champness in January, and they'll look to buy a player in the transfer window. Then they can kick on. So for mine, I think the first 8 weeks, 6 to 8 weeks will tell a picture. If they get through it fairly unscathed, well, then they're set up for another very, very strong finish.
And James, this weekend, they do travel across the ditch to play Wellington, a team who is tipped to finish down towards the bottom end of the table. But it can be a bit of a banana skin on the road. How do you see this one panning out?
Yeah, well, it's been a real banana skin one for the Jets in the past. I think prior to last year, they had a horrendous record over there. There in Perth were their 2 bogey teams in terms of the away trips. But I think there'll be goals. There's no doubt about that. I think the Jets will certainly stretch them defensively. I haven't had a great look at Wellington Phoenix. I know they've bought a couple of new Spanish players in the last week. And, of course, they've got Roy Christian and David Williams. And they've got plenty of pace up front. I think it'll be pretty open. But I'd like to think if the Jets can convert some of their chances, I think they might get away with that one. And I think you'll see Wellington improve as they go along. But they're boarding quite a few players from the state league. So it's going to take them time to adjust. Some new Spanish players. I think they will certainly take a month or so, you would think, to gel and really get firing into Mark Rudan. So it's probably a good time for the Jets to get them over there, that's for sure.
Well, James, the 14th edition of the A-League gets underway this Friday. Thank you so much for coming on the show to discuss the Newcastle Jets.
Anytime, girl.
That is the Newcastle Herald's James Gardiner chatting to us. Of course, he mentions Roy O'Donovan will be back in December, and if the Jets can get through the first 8 weeks of the A-League season, then they're setting themselves up nicely to win the grand final.
But how do you see Newcastle going this season? Do you think they'll make the finals again, or do you think that because a lot of other teams, maybe below them, have improved, do you see Newcastle, you know, doing what they did again last season, which was an incredible year? No one saw it coming, but can lightning strike twice? Can they, you know, recreate what they achieved last season?
I think they can.
They can, but where do you see?
I think they can definitely make finals. Yeah, definitely.
Home final, or do you think that they'll potentially have to play on the road, maybe 5th or 6th?
Yeah, probably on the road.
You think they're going to be?
I just think they're going to drop off. I don't know. I just think the A-League is so competitive this season. It's really, in my mind, unpredictable.
Now look, you look at.
All these different clubs. You know, a lot of them look really good on paper, but that as we know, can be a completely different story out on the pitch.
Squad unity is key. They didn't really lose anyone. Andrew Nabuu is really the only one that they lost in terms of a guy that added a lot for them.
100% top six finish.
Yeah, and I think, you know, not having O'Donovan and Champness is going to test them, but there's no reason why they can get some gritty 1-0 wins or defend hard and maybe pop up with an unlikely source. Maybe Kane Sheppard will be the great story of a state league player stepping up and being the hero in the early parts of the season. Maybe Jair might be a talent we haven't seen truly. You know, that we've overlooked. We've looked so much at De Jong and Honda and Lafondra and these other brilliant imports. But are we overlooking, you know, Jair could potentially be that guy? We don't know. That's the mystery. We don't know if he's going to end up being another Mario Jardel or Edson Montano, or is he going to end up being another one of those guys like a Sergio Van Dijk or a Bessar Berisha who ends up being one of the best that come through.
And of course, the fixture does play into where a team ultimately finishes, and the Jets are on the road for the first two match days, and then they have their first home game in round three against Melbourne Victory.
Final rematch.
But you look at their first four games, Louise, after Wellington, things get really difficult. Teams that I think they're going to play finals, then Western Sydney and Melbourne City, who are two teams who are more than likely be up there again. So it's not going to be easy for Newcastle, but there is no reason why they Lightning can't strike twice and they can't improve on what they already set out to do last season.
That, you make a good point. Victory in the third round, Sydney FC in the fourth, and then the Western Sydney Wanderers.
Yeah, but two of those games at home does help, and Newcastle have basically made McDonald Jones Stadium a fortress. And we saw it didn't really work out for them on grand final day. They were beaten by Melbourne Victory in some controversial circumstances with the VAR. But end of the day, they were very good at home last year, and we'll see how they go this season. And I'm very excited to see how they if they can back it up again.
Mm. Hear, hear. Nick, we're going to take a quick break, but plenty more coming up.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
This is Evenings on FNR. You're with Louise Taffer and Nick DiBarno, and you can get involved at any time by giving us a call on 03 99 44 99 99. Well, we're going to switch our focus over to talk about expansion, and joining us now from Team 11 is their project officer, Matt Windley. Matt, thanks for coming on the show.
No dramas, guys. How you going?
We're doing great. Matt, the final six were announced today. How are you guys feeling, more importantly, as we edge closer to the announcement?
Yeah, it was an interesting day, wasn't it? I think everyone, like, I suppose it's been sort of mooted for a few weeks now that this delay was possible. You know, there's a few stories flying around and all that sort of stuff. So I suppose the announcement wasn't necessarily a shock, and it had sort of got out a little bit last night. What was, I suppose, a little bit of a surprise was, you know, the fact that, unfortunately for Wollongong and Ipswich, they've been cast aside and so left to, you know, a final six. I suppose if you ask Western Melbourne and South Melbourne, they feel exactly the same. While it's great to be, you know, acknowledged as part of the top six, realistically, they're not going to take two bids from Victoria. So it really probably leaves us as the status quo in terms of fighting for a spot in Melbourne, Victoria, and if that's the way that FFA decide to go.
Matt, it's Nick here, and the Casey Fields were announced that they were going to be redeveloped yesterday by John Aaron, the Sports Minister of Victoria. Big redevelopments happening down there. How does this affect the bid? How does it affect the bid in any way?
It's really positive. I mean, it's sort of related to the bid, and it's sort of not. So we sort of came out a few months ago and said there's a $38 million development at Casey Fields. And so what John Aaron announced yesterday was the first part of that, an $18 million community facility with, you know, four new pitches, eight change rooms, all flood lit. Three of those pitches are synthetic, female friendly, and that's going to happen regardless of whether or not we get into the A-League and W-League, which is fantastic because obviously, you know, the city of Casey's one of, if not the fastest growing council in the country and definitely in the state. You know, we badly need more pitches out in the southeast of Victoria. You know, you've got Casey Commons nearby, who's got about 200 on their waiting list. Berwick City, Casey Panthers have got about the same on their waiting list. It's crazy. So, and they've got people on their waiting list because they don't have the pitches to be able to cater for the demand. So to have four new pitches, you know, it's just the start. And hopefully we've had a little bit to do with that. And then, you know, on top of that, if we get into the A-League and W-League, then there'll be a $20 million high-performance centre built at that exact same site, in the same building, and also then a fifth pitch, which you know, is a little bit of a mini stadium pitch to be used for big local matches and potentially, you know, pre-season matches and all that sort of stuff as well. So a really exciting day for the region, and hopefully a little bit of voted confidence in the direction that Team 11 is going.
And Matt, there's an article released today in the Sydney Morning Herald about some concerns regarding the funding for the new stadium, whether the bid is to be successful. What can you tell us about how the state election in Victoria will affect that?
Nah, the state election won't affect anything. I mean, it's not really new news, to be honest. we've been pretty, you know, upfront right from the start that we're seeking government funding for this stadium, and that's because it's not just going to suit football. I mean, clearly we are, as a sport, going to be the major beneficiaries of it, to have, you know, a 15 to 20,000 seat boutique stadium in the middle of a major population hub, you know, the biggest population hub in Victoria. And, you know, but, you know, the rugby league could be played there, rugby union could be played there. You know, we got plenty of multicultural festivals and events and all that sort of stuff, that community events that can be held there, a community foundation around there. So that's why, you know, the state government would be looking at it, because it serves a massive purpose for the whole community. It's not just a privately run business. So, yeah, look, as I sort of said to Don Bossy in the story, there's been so much work that's gone on behind the scenes. It's really now up to the FFA to make a decision. And if they want to have a team in Victoria and they want to have a team in the southeast of Victoria, that's fantastic. Then they've got to alert the government and we'll go from there.
And Matt, today Gadir Rizuki was announced as the interim chair of the bid. What can you tell us about his appointment?
He is the most beautiful man. He is absolutely lovely. I can sit in his company for hours and hours and hours. So he used to be on the board. He used to be one of the owners of Melbourne Heart. So he's born in London, but he's Iraqi. He went back to Iraq for, you know, the first 7 or 8 years of his life, and then his family had to flee Iraq and then move back to London. And he spent, you know, most of his sort of adolescence there. He founded TNT magazine, did really well with that, sold that, and then moved to Australia early 2000s, and sort of the rest is history. So he is heavily involved in the sort of the southeast sort of football scene. Has strong links with several people that are involved with our club and our bid. Especially, and just overnight, you know, has been meeting with people. He's overseas at the moment, meeting people on our behalf. So he's actively engaged, and it's good that we can actually start to push some of these people out that we've got sort of behind us. You know, we've got Jerry Ryan as our major shareholder. He's, you know, the owner and founder of Jayco Caravans. You know, we've got Gadir and others now. We'll start to sort of push out their names over, you know, the coming weeks. You know, which will show an even, you know, deeper connection to our local community down here in the southeast.
And speaking of local community, do you think that the community support has strengthened in the past few months?
I think so. I mean, I come up with little examples all the time. I think if you asked anyone what Team 11 is, you know, even when I started, when I left the Herald Sun in March, I don't think many people would have known. But, you know, I went to a big primary schools event last week where there were about 300 kids, and the guy at the Soccer 5 Centre, Jack Gillibrand, asked, you know, who knows what Team 11 is. And I reckon half the hands shot up. And, you know, for grade 5s and 6s to sort of have a little bit of an idea about what's going on there, I thought was actually really cool. Because, you know, for some of the kids, it might sort of go over their heads as to what's this bidding process and all that sort of stuff. So there's absolutely, you know, a growing buzz in this community. You know, we've had 54 local clubs sign up to us, or with us, to stand beside us and say they want to partner with us. If we're lucky enough to be accepted into the A-League, I think, you know, the sport a lot of the time, or does a lot of work, I should say, concentrating on, you know, trying to attract mainstream fans. But down in the southeast, we've got more than 22,000 registered footballers, and obviously lots of people that can't play because of the lack of pitches, as I said sort of before. So the football family down here is strong, and the distance to the city is a real issue when it comes to supporting Melbourne Victory and Melbourne City. So for them to be able to have a local club in their area, a professional men and women's club that represents their interests and gives their kids a pathway to the top, and that we can all sort of work together hand in hand, I think, you know, makes a lot of sense to a lot of people, and hopefully it makes sense to the FFA as well.
And Matt, you spoke about how plenty of the local clubs around the southeast of Victoria started to jump on board. Can we expect any more to continue to do that as we get closer towards the announcement?
Hope so. Going to continue working on it. I'm currently in the car heading out to a local club that I haven't actually had a chance to chat with yet. So that's sort of been the thing. There's been that many things to do with the bid. I haven't wanted to sign, you know, just push any club to sort of sign up with us that I haven't actually spent genuine time with and fronted, you know, their committee and people there. So, you know, it's been a slowly approach and making sure doing it the right way and eyeballing people and talking to them about, you know, any questions that they might have or anything like that before, you know, sort of asking, do you want to sort of go out publicly and say you're in support of us? So, yeah, definitely, I suppose that's sort of one of the things I'm looking forward to. If there is a little bit of a delay with this process, you know, that's more time free of paperwork to sort of be able to head out to coffees, you know, with presidents and vice presidents, and also, you know, at the weekends and weeknights at training and games that, you know, people are still doing sort of over the summer months. So, yeah, that's definitely one positive as part of this delay, that's for sure.
So should the delay be past the 31st of October, it wouldn't be more difficult for the winning clubs to be ready for 2019-2020?
I suppose it depends on how much, to be honest, Louise. Like, I mean, we've still got a plan in place to start in 2019, if that's what is so required. But I reckon, well, how long is a piece of string? I mean, you know, where is that breaking point of, you know, we can leave it until this date before it starts to get too tricky for the bids to come in for 2019-20? I reckon that's what the A-League clubs, that's what the FFA, that's what the bids themselves will be asking themselves. You know, what is that critical end date that you can sort of leave it till before, you know, you absolutely have to make a decision as to next season, or whether or not you sort of just have to cut your losses and go again for 2020-21. My sense is that, you know, we won't have to all wait ridiculously long for a decision per se. But again, whether or not that, you know, then means that the clubs come in 19-20 or 2021 that's anyone's guess.
Well, Matt, we must thank you very much for joining us here on Evenings on FNR. Good luck with the rest of the bidding process, and I'm sure we'll get a chance to speak to you again very soon.
No dramas, guys. Have a good night.
It's the project manager of the We Are Team 11 A-League expansion bid, Matt Winley, joining us to discuss as they get a little bit closer towards the announcement of whether they'll get the A-League expansion spot. Very interesting times happening in the southeast of Victoria. I think that they're still up near the front of one of the teams that will get the bid. He did make a good point that there will probably only be one Victorian team that goes through, whether it's them, the Western Melbourne group, or South Melbourne. It's all to be seen.
Well, I agree with him there. Only one Victorian team can go through, you'd think, because then we'd have four teams in Victoria.
Yeah, well, you would.
Would we have, like, two derbies?
Another distance Victoria derby, maybe, between Western Melbourne Group and We Are Team 11. Maybe we get a traditional derby, the derby everyone wants, South Melbourne versus Melbourne Victory.
Well, this is why you mount the case that given that there is three Victorian teams left, two in New South Wales and only one in Canberra, surely Canberra has to get an A-League licence. But at the same, and we discussed this the other day, I am not confident because David Gallop has said that the successful bidders will be sustainable from day one.
Mm.
So what does that mean? That means that, you know, they attract a certain amount of crowds.
Well, Canberra's ready. They've got a W League team.
They do, and they have a youth league team.
Exactly,
so
yeah.
They need that pathway.
Doesn't it just make sense to have an A League team in Canberra? If you've got a youth league team, you've got a W League team, why not have a men's team? We usually see the other way, sometimes the other way around, how you'll see an A League team and a youth league, A League team, but no W League team or something like that. But now Canberra's got a W League team, so why haven't they got an A League team?
I don't know. I would really like to see Canberra get an A League team, of course, you know, and then we have the two teams in New South Wales.
I think that one of them will definitely be right in the mix. I think it's almost now the top six, the cream has finally risen to the top. I'm very surprised that Wollongong got the chop, because I thought they were one of the teams that really had a strong case.
But I mean, when you look at it, that's exactly right. I mean, when you think of expansion, disregard the whole topic, but when you think of expansion and you think of, if I could put a club anywhere in Australia, two more A-League clubs anywhere in Australia, where would you put them?
Canberra.
And?
You need a capital team. And you'd think Wollongong.
Well, that's it.
Because they're the two hubs. Wollongong's got history in the NSL, but then some could say South Melbourne has even more history. They're the biggest state league team, NPL team in Australia, arguably, because of the history they've got. You know, and in their words, they conquered all of Oceania. You know, they are a team that are there. They're ready to go, South Melbourne. Like, they've got the infrastructure. They've got a very, very passionate fan base. And they have the history on their side. But then again, you have to think, you know, have they mounted enough of a case to maybe push ahead of, you know, Western Melbourne Group or Weir Team 11 or one of those New South Wales or ACT bids? I personally think, though, that these teams, especially a Wollongong and a South Melbourne, I don't think that they'll make it this time around. Obviously, Wollongong won't, but I think that they'll have to settle for when the second division comes into play.
And does it help with all of the issues coming out about South Melbourne at the moment?
Well, it's all alleged at the moment. Nothing's in stone.
Okay.
We know that there's a lot of talk that, you know, that there's discussion about these unpaid wages, but it's interesting how they got released now as we're getting closer towards the deadline. I don't think so. I think that it's still all systems go. I honestly think the FFA know somewhat who's going to get it because we're, what, a couple of weeks away from when they're supposed to be announced. You'd think they'd have some sort of idea of who the two teams are. And I'm going to go out on a limb and I'm going to say I think Weir Team 11 and Canberra are going to be the two teams that get it. I've been a firm believer in Canberra as well, Louise. I've always said that in any code, in anywhere in the world, in any sport, you need to have a team in the capital, and it doesn't make sense. Doesn't matter how small Canberra are, but you need to have at least one team in the professional league coming out of the capital city. Like, it's almost nonsensical to think that the A-League doesn't have a team in Canberra. The only team in any code is the NRL team. They don't have, you know, an AFL team. They've only got an A-League. They don't have a W-League team in NRL. You'd think that because they are... They don't have too much to get behind, that if Canberra got the bid, the fans would get behind them. And they got pretty good crowds for their Asian Cup games, pretty sure. There were not bad attendances for
some
of them.
But even when you look at the W League, I mean, they have this boutique stadium called McKellar Park.
It's pretty nice, yeah.
And they get more than 2,000 fans. Now, I mean, that's more than people that go to some of the other W League clubs that have an A League team
like
as well.
Like a Melbourne City, who are very, very successful.
Some of them across the other side of Australia get, you know, like 700 to their W League games. So Canberra actually get more than 2,000. So that's just for the W League. Imagine what they could get for the A League. And given that, as I touch on, they don't have a pathway for the youth players coming through. So if they sign, you know, one, two, three, however many products from the youth team as well and provide that pathway, then it would build more momentum and more people would want to come out and watch.
I think so, and I think there will be a bit of a pull to go play for Canberra. We know they already have 7,000 members, which is remarkable. You've got 7,000 members already. That's more than some A-League clubs.
But all you have to do is build a boutique stadium.
Exactly right, and they've got one.
It doesn't have to be like a, you know, 45, 50 seater.
You don't need an Allianz Stadium replica, what they're doing in Sydney or what they're doing in Western Sydney. You need something that's still going to create noise. It's like Western Melbourne and Weir Team 11 are building these 20,000 seat stadiums, which are going to be incredible with the atmosphere and the way they're going to be built. It's going to really keep the noise in. Canberra's got a stadium ready to go. And look, I'm no big rugby watcher. What I've heard is they make a lot of noise for the fans that have this skull chant similar to what the Icelandic fans do. And they really get behind them and it becomes very vibrant. So I think that Canberra should, and it makes sense for them to get into the A-League. I am going out and saying Canberra and Weir Team 11 are my predictions. And look, the other teams, they've mounted a case, and I think that eventually all of those bids will find a way into either the first division or a second division or the next round of expansion. Whenever it comes through, they'll be there eventually. But I just think in this round, Weir Team 11 and Canberra have built enough of a case to be those teams. Louise, who's your other team? You've said you've built your case for Canberra. Who do you think is going to be the second team that gets through?
Your guess is as good as mine. And I am liking what I see from Team 11. I'm going to say Team 11.
You're going to go Team 11?
I really am.
Yeah, well, look, there's something about it. They've built such a strong case. It's such a strong catchment area as well. Matt Winley said there's over 22,000 registered players down in that area of Victoria. It's a big, big area. It's a long way away from the city. It's hard for them to get to Melbourne, into the hub, to go watch Melbourne Victory or Melbourne City out of Amy Park or Marvel Stadium. If you're going to get them, you get them out of the boutique stadium out in Dandenong. It's real. It also adds that tribal feel. But it's also very similar for the guys over at the Western Melbourne Group, because that is a whole other hub as well, where there's a big catchment area from Geelong, etc. Mm. And I guess we'll just have to see how it all pans out.
Well, Nick, we are going to take a quick break because coming up, we are going to go back to the A-League and talk to Tony Pignata from Perth Glory.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
This is Evenings on FNR, and you're with Louise Taffer and Nick DiBano. And like always, please get involved at any time. You can head to our Twitter page or you can give us a call. Nick, though, I believe there's a few tweets coming through.
If you want to join in discussion anytime, you can via at FNR underscore radio. MFKS has come through and said that South coming back will be a sign of unification of old soccer and new football. Very good point. I fully get behind that, because very, very good point there in saying that you get the old NSL champions, one of the most historically significant and successful teams in Australian football, coming in and, you know, adding their spin to the old, you know, the old NSL and the A-League coming together, and a chance for a historic derby with Melbourne Victory, a team that they have a lot of history with without really ever meeting. So that will be another interesting one. And Sam Anfield has come through and said, no issue with Canberra, but we at Team 11 just aren't there yet. So he's going all out for South Melbourne. And I think that, you know, I think that the South Melbourne fans are getting right behind their bid. It's great to see. We want to see fans coming through and say what they have to say. And you can do that. Give us a call on 99999993 at the front. Especially if you're outside of Victoria and you're from New South Wales. Want to chip in on if whether you're behind Southern Expansion or South West Sydney, even Canberra, Louise. And or tweet us at FNR underscore radio, just as they have prior to that.
That's it. And Canberra has been labelled the dark horse bidders. Now, it's really interesting because we touched on it. They're one of the only capital cities in the world that doesn't have a football team.
Mm. Yeah, as we said, the only in the whole world.
The thing that gets me, it's not just a football team. It provides a pathway to the younger players coming up.
The AIS is based in Canberra.
Well, that's no longer running.
Yeah, well, we should say, keyword is was.
What happened was, when you had the AIS and then the Centre of Excellence, that would provide a pathway for young players to go through there and then go on to do bigger and better things. Mm. But now that that closed down last year, they do not have a pathway for the players. They have a youth league team now, but the talent that comes out of Canberra often finds that they have to go to another city and they have to go elsewhere in order to get a professional contract.
Yeah, and look, you want to see the best out of the catchment areas that are possible. And I think that what you get through Canberra is an opportunity, as you said, for more pathways. Louise, you spoke a lot about that there are a lot of players in that Canberra catchment area that don't have those same opportunities as if you are based in Victoria, New South Wales, even South Australia or Queensland. So, look, I think that Canberra right now have gone from a dark horse to a favourite. And they're definitely right up there, because it almost seems like at least one Victorian bid will get through as well. But that one ACT bid, that seems like they're just making a great case, because you got three Victorian bids out of six for two spots, which means there's at least a 50% chance that one will get through. And then you've got that dark horse, which is Canberra, who have suddenly just risen from the ashes and are now right in it. They've got the base, they've got the members on side, they've got the catchment area, as you said, Louise, and you're very passionate about it. Love to see what happens in the next few weeks. I'm very excited to see how it all goes. I want to ask you this question, Louise. What if South Melbourne get in? Do you think that they're a real good shot for it?
Look, I think the final six all have a very good shot at it. You know, I'm not the one making the decisions, and therefore I can't really predict what is going to happen, because you could say one thing and then the complete opposite could, you know, come about, and next thing we have two completely different teams that we didn't even realise would make it in.
Yeah.
I think that, as I said, FFA want to make sure that whichever two are selected, they're going to be sustainable from day one.
Yeah.
So that's key.
That does go in South Melbourne's favour. South Melbourne have the history, and they've got the stadium, they've got the everything. That is everything you want going in your favour. I think South Melbourne are still right in the mix. Look, they haven't had a great NPL season. They really struggled this year compared to some of the other heavyweights. But having that behind you is so, so important, and something that might just set them apart. But then, you know, you got to take into consideration, have they done enough to get in? We'll wait and see. But I'm very intrigued as well about the Western Melbourne group, because I think that, you know, what Maurice Bassetto and co are doing over there is really, really exciting. I think that if they don't get in this round, they're definitely going to get in the next, because I honestly think, along with We Are Team 11, they've built a very, very strong base. And so we've spoken to Maurice quite extensively about this in the past, and they've mounted quite a strong case, and there's no reason why they won't get in. But as we said, I think only one of those Victorian teams will get in, and there'll be two unlucky sides, and they're just going to have to go around again the next time.
Well, that's it. And I mean, the bidders have spent a combined total of around $6 million on preparing their submissions for the deadline day on October 31st. So as we know, a lot of work goes into creating and getting an A-League club off the ground.
It's like when we speak about World Cup bids and how Australia poured in so much money to go for 2018 and 2022 and they didn't get it.
But what was against us was the broadcasting rights and the whole broadcasting element of it.
Yeah, and it's almost like it's a lot of money to submit for these sort of things, and you're investing a lot in promotion, in getting things right in terms of making sure that, you know, you have the, what's the right word, that you've got enough a bit behind you, because we've seen A-League clubs have folded in the past, Louise. Gold Coast United, North Queensland Fury, New Zealand Knights became the Wellington Phoenix. Not saying it's going to happen, but you have to make sure everything's sustainable and ready to go, because they're coming in next season, talking 2019, 2020. They've got to go straight. And that is what, as we said, will work in the favour of South Melbourne. But those other A-League teams better get signing players once they get there. And I wouldn't be surprised if a Team 11, sudden expansion, etc., they get in, they're going to go straight after and start announcing signings very soon. And I think that will be really exciting to see who comes through. Western Sydney, last team to get into the A-League, had a brilliant first off season. What if we got the same from one of these new expansion sides?
Wouldn't it be incredible? And, that's the other thing. Just because, you know, a team might be launched in Melbourne or launched in Canberra doesn't necessarily mean that they will sign majority of the squad from that city.
Yeah, look, it doesn't mean anything, really.
Opens the door for everyone, every professional player.
Well, I think it just gives an opportunity for some more of those A-League players and NPL players who have been in and amongst the discussion to put themselves in the ringer to get a contract. Like, there are so many NPL guns out there, and there's no reason why more marquees will come through. And how exciting would that be if we get more big names coming out and playing here? We know that these A-League clubs are going after all the big names at the moment. And considering how we spoke about off the top that Zlatan Ibrahimovic and Fernando Torres have been spoken about as some of the potential new signings, Louise, what if one of these, you know, A-League teams come out and go for one of the big guns, one of these new expansion sides? But I guess it's all wait to be seen in the near future once those teams get announced in about 2 weeks' time.
Well, are we going to switch our focus to one of the A-League clubs? And joining us now is Perth Glory's Chief Executive Officer and one of our good friends, Tony Pignata. Tony, thank you so much for coming on the show.
No problems. Thanks for having me.
And Tony, you've been at Glory now since May. How have the first 5 months been for you?
It's been excellent. It's good to get back in the A-League. As you know, I had about 8 or 9 months off after Sydney FC, and, you know, to get back in and the season about to launch on Sunday, it's exciting. So, no, I'm really looking forward to it.
And, Tony, a massive game this weekend to kick it all off against the Western Sydney Wanderers. How excited are you for this one?
Yeah, no, it's great to have the Wanderers over here, and, you know, there's a bit of... with Popper coaching and some of our players like Brendan and, you know, Sporanovic, who used to play, and Economides as well. So it adds a little bit of a spice to the game. So we're hoping for a decent crowd. We just need the weather gods to help us out a little bit. But, it's going to be an exciting time.
What do you mean? I heard it's always sunny over there.
Well, that's what they told me. I mean, as you know, I'm from Melbourne, and I'll tell you what, though, you know, I look at the weather in Melbourne and go, Jesus, I wish I had Melbourne weather.
Tony, and you would have just finished your first Glory in Business lunch today. How did the launch go?
Yeah, that was excellent. It's inaugural business lunch to kick off the not only the A-League but the W-League season, which that kicks off in just over a week's time. We had over 400 people there, and it was a good way to, get the business community of Perth together and get them supporting Perth Glory.
And Tony, today, in the past couple of days, Diego Castro has been announced as the new captain of Perth Glory. What was the decision-making behind that one?
Yeah, so Diego was announced today, and I think Popper was just wanted, make a bit of a change, and Diego really enjoyed a couple of times when he was captain and enjoyed that responsibility. You know, he's going to set up a leadership team with, you know, there's three vice captains as well, so, which is, you know, Keo and Shane Lowry and Liam Reddy. So between the four of them, they'll be able to ensure that the leadership, and it's a great bunch of guys as well. So I think Diego embraced it, and he's been rewarded.
And Tony, of course, you've recruited new players. Are there any in particular you're looking forward to seeing in action this season?
We've got, quite a few new boys in. I think the one that stands out the most, I mean, you know, Economides for his age and where he's come from is going to be brilliant. But for me, yeah, I want to see Jason Davidson. He's never played in the A-League. He's played for the Socceroos. He's played Premier League. And I'm really, excited, watching him play and, speeding down that left wing and getting the crosses in for Keo to head home. So I'm really looking forward to all of them. But, Jason maybe, given that he's never played in the A-League.
And Tony, how has Tony Popovich settled into his new role ever since coming in? We know he's had a couple of friendlies and FFA Cup clash as well. How's he got the squad going heading into match day one?
Yeah, we've been training for 17 weeks. So it's a long pre-season. We've probably played more games than Perth have ever played. We've played three A-League teams. It's so hard, and you don't realise until you actually come here how hard it is to organise games, because no one wants to come here. Now, if they come in here to play us once or twice, that's enough. So we've got to make the trek over east. And, we were lucky that we played Melbourne Victory in the FFA Cup in round one. Unfortunately, we lost that one. So that hurt a bit, because then you don't have any other games. You've got to go out and try and find games. We had a good 7 days in Malaysia, played a couple of games there, but more so than the playing, it was about training every day and about building, within the group, some culture, some camaraderie as well. And then we ended up playing Melbourne City as well, and we went to Adelaide. So pre-season done and dusted, and I think the boys are fit and ready to go.
And Tony, the mood in Perth at the moment must be very jovial. It'll be very optimistic off-season. It's been a great year for sport in Perth in general, with the new Optus Stadium, the success of some of the other sporting teams. Are the fans really excited heading into this year for Perth Glory?
Yeah, there is a sense of excitement. I think since the announcement of Tony Popovich as coach, there's been that hope that this is the year. But we're about winning. For us, the mentality here and what we're bringing here is about that. It's about winning trophies, not just making the numbers up. We don't want to finish sixth or fifth. We want to push to win it. We want to push for the Champions League. We want to be a real contender. And I think the people of Perth, when they see that and we're doing that, they'll embrace it. And they'll get right behind their their A-League team. And we're lucky that there's no other A-League team here. When we're not competing with, NRL clubs. And we've got a couple of AFL clubs. They're finished. We only really go head-to-head once with the Big Bash. So, we're hopeful that we can, get our crowds up to that, 12, 13, 14,000 mark. And really it's about, Sunday, getting the best crowd we can get and then delivering on the pitch.
And Tony, we have a question coming in from social media from Lyle. He is just asking about the Glory memberships and why they're expensive compared to some of the other A-League clubs.
Well, yeah, I suppose every club is different. Every city is different in their economic structure. We play at a stadium that's probably, I compare it to the Sydney Allianz. It's probably 1.5 times more expensive to play here because there's not enough content. So the stadium still has to pay the upkeep, etc. And of course we get charged. Also this year they've introduced a public transport. So for every patron that goes, so we pay I think something like $4. So that's, if you get a crowd of 10,000, that's 40,000. You multiply that by 14. There's another, $500,000 bucks that we never had to pay last year and we have to pay this year. So Yeah, it probably is a little bit more expensive than the some of the A-League clubs. But I work it out, you know. It's a family, you know. I think what the example everyone's been using is a family membership. You know, you divide that by 14, you divide that by 4, works out to be about $16-17 a game per person. Not too bad if you look at it in that way.
Very true there, Tony. And some other exciting news coming through from the Glory today was partnering with the London Football Exchange. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, no, that's very exciting with London Football Exchange coming on as our back of shirt sponsor. It's been a sponsorship's tough business to get out there and find them. But no, we're wrapped at they've come in and they're a group that's really growing. They're a financial sort of group that want to take, you know, I suppose, ownership into various clubs around the world. And, you know, this is, you know, the first for them to venture in the A-League. And we welcome them as our sponsor.
And, Tony, I mean, the whole league has really strengthened this season and you've obviously brought in Popovic. How far do you think Glory can go?
Well, if you're not doing anything, mate, it's 17th come to Optus Stadium for the grand final, will you?
Oh, will I get first-class seats?
I don't know. If you know, they're paying first class. I travel economy. I don't know.
Yeah, and Tony, just on that notion, is that confirmed that if, you know, the Glory were to make the finals this season and a grand final in that, will it be at Optus Stadium this year or will it be staying at NIB, considering all other home games will be there?
It's going to be hard to fit 60,000 at NIB.
Very good point.
Yeah.
And Tony, I mean, obviously you had Chelsea out here in July. Are there any more plans to see some other big clubs like that coming over for some friendlies?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, you know, there's always been sort of rumours and innuendos thrown around. Like, I hope so. I think the government here is really, I suppose, pushing for more content at Optus Stadium. So it'd be great if there's another club that'll come up and play us in the pre-season next year. But, yeah, nothing's confirmed at this stage.
And, Tony, you're synonymous with marquee signings. And in terms of the W League, you've made history as Sam Kerr recently became the first female marquee player. Tell us a little bit about how this got over the line.
Yeah, look, I think Sam was, you know, she had a lot of offers from overseas, European clubs, and she was torn about coming home, playing in the W League and getting, you know, sort of big dollars playing in Europe. You know, the FFA, to their credit, you know, we worked out that, you know, they could use some of their marquee fund. And, you know, it is about, she's the best footballer in the world in women's football. And, you know, keeping her playing in the W League, it's a World Cup year as well. So it was very, very important. And, you know, for Sam, she probably could have got more going overseas. But for her to stay and play with her family and, sorry, play with her friends here and teammates and she got the family and, yeah, she's a down-to-earth person and a great footballer. So I'm excited, really, to, you know, see her play as well.
Yeah, indeed. And let's hope the W League team can make finals this season.
Yeah, it's important. I know last year they started off, you know, not too bad and then sort of fell away. So I know Bobby Despotowski is really, you know, aiming to make the playoffs as well and make a push because, you know, we've built a strong squad as well. And, you know, we're confident that we can make those playoffs.
Well, Tony, we love your work and I've tipped Glory to finish in the top two this season. So all the very best.
No problems. Book those flights, will you?
I will. Thanks, Tony.
No worries.
That's Perth Glory's Chief Executive Officer, Tony Pignata, joining us. And we certainly miss him around the studio.
We really do.
On Football Bosses here.
Yeah, well, it's a very jovial mood over in Perth at the moment. The season kicks off for them on Sunday. It's been an off-season of eager anticipation for the Glory. They're closing in on the new season with all these new signings, taking on a Western Sydney Wanderers mob who have also had quite an interesting off-season. New manager, Marcus Babbel, some good signings, and Alexander Baumjohann, the German import who's looking like a real superstar. So that game's going to certainly have fireworks come Sunday night at 7 p.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time.
It will. I'm really looking forward to it. And Tony's looking forward to seeing Jason Davidson play.
Yeah, I think it will be really exciting to see how he goes. We haven't seen Jason Davidson potentially reach the heights that we all thought he would after the 2014 World Cup and 2015 Asian Cup, where he was a big part of that team that went all the way down under, and had a few ill-fated spells at West Bromwich Albion, Huddersfield, all around Europe. But now he gets a chance to start again in the A-League. I think he's really going to be one of the big players, along with Matthew Sporanovic, another one who dropped right out of Socceroos contention after similar campaigns, and both guys missed out on the World Cup, and they've still got some very talented players up front as well, with, you know, bringing in Chris Economides and Brendan Santelab, and still having Diego Castro and Andy Keogh. Exciting.
Very, very exciting. I'm looking forward to it. Nick, we are going to take a quick break, and coming up, we're going to discuss the Melbourne Derby.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
This is Evenings on FNR, and the A-League season is on our doorstep. It's very, very close. I'm so excited for it to begin. And in the first round, Nick, we have a Melbourne derby.
We sure do. Saturday night from Marvel Stadium, 7:30 p.m. on your local guides on Foxtel, on Fox Sports, and also be on Channel 1 HD for those on free-to-air. This is going to be huge. New names at the stadium, but not just that. We're going to be seeing some fantastic new imports from both teams. Melbourne Victory with the Japanese superstar Keisuke Honda, Ola Toivonen, their Swedish striker, Raul Baena, the Spanish midfielder, and also Jörg Niedermeyer in defence. Whilst the other side of the field, Melbourne City have also strengthened.
Yes, they have. And we heard from Richie Delatt yesterday.
Yeah.
I wonder if he can keep out the likes of Honda and the rest.
Well, he's accomplished. He's a good defender. They've also brought in Riley McGree, who scored one of the greatest A-League goal of all time.
Do you think we'll ever see one of those again?
The A-League competition's going to be running for years, and I think definitely we might see something down the track. Someone might recreate it. Riley McGree has almost been the figurehead of all A-League advertising in the off-season, especially on Fox Sports. And it's
well,
great
of course,
to see.
He was flown over to the FIFA Best Awards.
Yes,
and he was rubbing shoulders with the likes of Mo Salah,
Lionel Messi, Cristiano Ronaldo, some of the big names. And look, I think as long as they've got guys like Florian Berenguer, the French import, Michael O'Halloran unfortunately won't be playing after hurting his knee. But Louise, the big question we posted on social media was about who has the bigger derby. Now, we know there's two big derbies in the A-League, the Melbourne derby and the Sydney derby.
What do you mean? The distance derby's big too.
Louise, come on. But in saying that, we put up on our Facebook socials that Melbourne at the moment are edging ahead of Sydney on 54% v 46%. If you want to get involved, head over to our Facebook page at FNR_FootballNationRadio and have your say about, well, who has the bigger derby. Now, Louise, who does, in your opinion?
Look, I think in terms of fans, I would say the Sydney derby.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of anything else, is it all Sydney for you, or do you think that Melbourne's still...
I love a good Melbourne derby,
yeah,
obviously,
I think...
because, you know, I live here.
Yeah, look.
But when you go to a Sydney derby, it's pretty special. And look, it's pretty special to see all the Western Sydney Wanderers, like, march into the stadium in their thousands. Yeah. I don't know if you've ever, like, experienced it, Nick, but it is something incredible.
I've never been to a Sydney derby, but I've been to plenty of games where Sydney and Western Sydney have made the trip down to Melbourne and played the Victory. And I've been to plenty. The West Sydney Wanderers fans are very raucous, and I've seen them in their little bay in Amy Park, what they usually are very loud. Back in the days when the flares were allowed and different sort of rules were applied to active support. But I, based off a lot of the Melbourne derbies I've been to, that's some of my favourite sporting memories have been at them. So I'm not saying it's Melbourne bias.
So you're going with your heart. You're not actually going with
your
logic.
Well, look, when I think about it, it's hard to make the judgment. I think the Sydney derby is very exciting, and I've only watched it on TV, and I feel the excitement. But I've been to so many Melbourne derbies that almost that does sway my opinion a little bit. So I don't know, I'm more on the fence. When I go to a Sydney derby, I'll make that choice. But in terms of some of the classic derby moments, like we've seen since Melbourne Victory, Melbourne City or Melbourne Heart have played, there have been so many. Not saying Sydney derby haven't had theirs, but look at some of the great moments, Louise. You look at the Tim Cahill halfway banger in his debut. You look at, you know, the Bessart Berisha hat-trick when David Veer played in his four-game stint for Melbourne. Eric Partaloo's header at Amy Park, which sent the crowd to raptures last year. Mark Milligan scoring a penalty in the Christmas derby to win the game. We've seen finals, FFA Cup semi-finals. But then you look at the Sydney derby moments, Louise, like Bernie Abini's absolute cracker. Kerrin Bullitt's almost single-handedly getting that win for Western Sydney in that incredible game. But Sydney have had this thing over Western Sydney where they have tended to dominate the derbies. I think Western Sydney have won one in a certain amount of time, but it's not like they've won too many. It's always recently, especially, been Sydney FC dominating those games.
Yeah, it has. And, I mean, in terms of crowd figures, you would have to say that the Sydney derby gets a bigger crowd. And I can actually say that based on logic and fact.
Yep.
The Western Sydney Wanderers hosted Sydney FC at ANZ Stadium on the 8th of October, 2016.
Mm.
Guess the attendance.
I think it was around, was it 61,000 they had at one game?
Yes.
But that's at ANZ Stadium, Louise. That's at a bigger ground where they play with 80,000 people. That's an 80,000 capacity stadium compared to playing, the biggest here is 55. So it is comparing apples and oranges in that sense. But I think there's one good point, is that there's more of a divide in terms of geography, because you've got the Western Sydney Wanderers from one part of Sydney. You know, Sydney is a big city. And then Sydney FC are more the central CBD fans.
Well, that's it. And the Western Sydney Wanderers, it's like a real working class, like,
it's
very heartland.
Tribal. It's very tribal. Like, there was nothing better than watching games from Parramatta Stadium on the TV. Like, I, personally, as I said, I've never been to a game in Sydney. I've never had the privilege of going to watch an A-League game up there. I've seen Socceroos qualifiers, but I've never seen a game like that.
I think for me, the Melbourne derby would overtake the Sydney derby once Melbourne City can get their fan base up to a level that Melbourne victory has it.
It seems like the Melbourne City fans, I've only really seen them raucous at a Melbourne City home derby at Amy Park. That's when you see them, because they've got that whole allocation on one side.
Yeah.
But you compare Western Sydney Wanderers and Melbourne City in terms of other home games when they're playing, say, a Perth Glory or a Newcastle Jets or something. Melbourne City struggled to sell out. There's no way they're going to sell out Amy Park. But Western Sydney, it's almost a guaranteed sellout if it's at their home ground. Now, last year, obviously, playing games at Spotless Stadium and ANZ Stadium, it's hard to fill those grounds. They're big stadiums, and they're not made for football in that sense, because they're both, well, even though ANZ Stadium is, you know, interchangeable, you can move the seats around, it's not like how Spotless Stadium is made for the AFL. So I think down here, there's a lot more close derbies in terms of action on the field. It's very evenly split. In the Sydney derby, listen to this. Sydney, 10 wins, 5 draws and 4 losses. So Western Sydney have only won 4 A-League derbies. Even though Western Sydney have won an A-League championship, they've been very successful recently. ACL championship, I should say. They've made plenty of grand finals, and Sydney FC won the championship. It's so unfortunate we haven't seen Western Sydney being able to even the ledger recently, because they haven't won a derby since February 2017 when Brenton Santelab scored that sole goal. And recently, it's been all Sydney FC, you know, 5-0 last season in a game at Stadium Australia. And obviously a 3-1 win for Sydney, and then 3-0, 2 weeks ago. And it goes to show that Sydney FC, in terms of their quality on the field recently, have really jumped ahead of Western Sydney. Western Sydney missed the finals entirely last year. But Melbourne Victory and Melbourne City are very even on the field. That's why I think this derby, in terms of quality on the field, is going to be really exciting. So it's anyone's game. That's why I think that's the excitement part of it. It's in terms of how we know that it's always going to be close. Recently, the Sydney derby, it's been very one-side dominant. It's been very dominant to one end.
I would agree that Melbourne City are certainly bridging the gap.
Yeah.
To Melbourne
Easy.
Victory
Easy.
In terms of competition.
No question about it. It's just a shame we haven't seen Melbourne City really translate that into many trophies. They've won an FFA Cup, but we haven't seen them make an A-League Grand Final yet. Melbourne Victory find themselves almost in A-League Grand Finals every second, third year. They've made the last 2 A-League Grand Finals. They're the champions. But Melbourne City have made that many finals, but just don't, when they get there, it just seems that they almost just fall apart. Last year, they were ahead in the semi-final of the against Newcastle Jets, and then the miraculous happened. The Jets came back and won the game. So you put things into perspective, it just seems that Melbourne Victory know how to get it done on the big stage in the finals, but Melbourne City just haven't had that chance yet. But I believe it's coming.
Yes.
I think eventually, in the, probably the next 2 or 3 seasons, I'd love to see Melbourne City start to really push for an A-League championship.
And especially given that Warren Joyce is going into his second A-League season.
More
he
time
knows
with the
ropes
squad.
A bit better. He's made some more key signings, especially in defence, with Mark Birigidi coming in, as we touched on, Richie Delatt, and also Bart Schenkerfeld there. Obviously, he's going into his second season in the A-League. So what you've got is almost like, you know, a squad that's coming into a bit more maturity. And, you know, I have no doubt that Melbourne City will certainly make the finals this season.
Now, Bruno Fornaroli is going to be fit for the whole year and has had a full pre-season.
Free of injury.
Could we see him recreate or get close to what was an incredible first season he had at Melbourne City and potentially be right up there in the Golden Boot? Because I think if they're going to be any chance of winning on Saturday, he's got to have a big game.
I was just about to say that. He has to.
He's their only real avenue to goal, in my opinion. Rolly McGree playing as a winger is not your best avenue to goal. And they've lost Daniel Arzani, who in that short period of time has gone from one strength to another. And he's a big loss. So it's a more of a question of, can Lockie Wales, you know, a guy who's had a very good preseason, can he potentially add something on the wing? Could Florian Benangue, the new French signing, add something in the middle of the park? You know, I think it's a big enigma over Melbourne City this season. We don't know what we're going to get from them. There's expectation for them to make the finals, but there's not the same expectation as there is on Melbourne Victory, considering the sheer quality and the name and the magnitude of the signings compared to Melbourne City.
Well, that's it. And do you think that if Victory do not win the A-League with their signings that they've made, their season will be classified as a failure, Nick?
Oh, it's so hard because they weren't the top side. They're top two. If they make the grand final, it's still a pass. But obviously, being the reigning champions, you still have that expectation to match it and win it again. But I still think that Sydney FC were the best team in the A-League last season, and Melbourne Victory simply got the better of them in that semi-final, which was one of the greatest A-League games we'll ever see. So I think that if Melbourne Victory can, you know, have another good season, they finish in the top two, I think that if they don't make another grand final, they'll be very disappointed, because you're getting Keisuke Honda and Ola Toivonen to come into that team. You got Keisuke Honda, who's, you know, arguably one of the greatest ever Asian players, and one of the, probably after Zlatan Ibrahimovic and Henrik Larsson, up there, one of the, some of the great Swedish attackers, a guy that scored against Germany at the World Cup. You're getting two guys that are expected to have huge impacts. Now, Melbourne Victory have two other guys alongside them we forget about, James Troisi and Costa Barbaroussis, who are no slouch in any means of the work. James Troisi is a fringe Socceroo player who, in many people's eyes, at his best, he's in the Socceroos team, potentially in the starting 11. And Costa Barbaroussis is one of the great players coming out of New Zealand, and one of the greatest players we've seen in this competition.
And we saw what he was capable of with Victory last season.
Exactly. He had a great year last year. And they've got a guy named Terry Antonis, who I think, if he gets going, he's an Asian Cup winner. We forget that he was part of that squad. Didn't play any minutes.
Villain turned hero last season.
Exactly, and he scored that such an important goal as well after what was really topsy-turvy. But I'm really excited for this one, Louise. I think that this is going to be, just in terms of the expectations, the excitement building around this game, having, you know, a Melbourne derby to start the year with these new imports, I'd be very disappointed if we don't get close to capacity on Saturday. I don't know what the figures are for crowd numbers at the moment, but I expect there'll be at least over 40,000 expected at Marvel Stadium this weekend.
And score prediction, Nick?
Oh, you're putting me on the spot here, Louise. I'm going to say Melbourne Victory 2-1, and I think Keisuke Honda and Ola Toivonen are both going to score in this game. I genuinely think that if Honda gets one moment, I think there's going to be that moment if he gets a free kick and you're going to see all the phones come out and you can see the flashes on. People are going to be waiting in eager anticipation, very similar to when Del Piero used to get a free kick for Sydney FC, and everyone will be like, oh, you know, something good's going to happen. You don't know exactly what. But if Honda gets a free kick, I think it's going one place. That's right in the top corner. But in saying that, don't rule out Melbourne City, because they always seem to step up for the derbies, especially recently. They're always very close games.
Well, you've ruled them out.
I haven't entirely ruled them out, Louise, but I said 2-1. 2-1.
2-1.
It's still going to be a close game, but I think Melbourne Victory have that little bit of extra talent, but don't rule out Melbourne City entirely, because I'll be right in this game right to the end.
I'm saying a 2-2 draw.
2-2 draw, Louise. Yes, now, yes. Just in terms of
Bruno Fornaroli to get on the score sheet.
Wow. Well, I think you actually scored the sole goal for Melbourne City. That is to say, my 2-1 prediction. And the head-to-head record has Melbourne City at 9 wins in all competitions. That includes the FFA Cup win, 5 draws and 12 wins to Melbourne Victory. Melbourne Victory also 42 goals to Melbourne City's 37. Bess Arborisha, the top goal scorer.
No
in
surprises
derby history.
There.
Not there. Archie Thompson second, but Bruno Fornaroli and Costa Barbaroussis both with 4, the two only active players in that top bracket of top scorers within the Melbourne derby history.
And do you know who's actually created the most goal-scoring chances?
Who's that?
And who did so in 2017-18?
For Melbourne Victory?
just generally in this Melbourne derby?
Costa Barbarouses.
No, Scott Jamieson, actually.
Scott Jamieson, the new captain of Melbourne City.
Second most of any defender in the competition.
Now, Louise, I want to ask a question about Melbourne City. Now, they've got a very exciting young batch of players. We didn't get to see much of Dennis Jeanreau, who moved off, Daniel Arzani off as well.
I got to see a lot of him.
Yeah, but I'm saying in the A-League, we didn't get to see too much of him. But are there any other Melbourne City players this season that you think are going to potentially make the step? Nathaniel Atkinson was one who made big strides last year. Will we see someone else maybe get a lot of minutes this year?
Of course. Melbourne City have quite a lot of really good academy players coming through the ranks. You've got Rami Nazarin, who is deployed usually out on the wing. He is outstanding. You've also got, as you've touched on, Nathaniel Atkinson. I can see him going into, a bigger role this season after he's come off the back of his, performances in 2017-18. And also we have, no Arzani, no Jeanreau.
That Moody Najjar.
Moody Najjar.
Yeah, another very good player.
Another
to come
forward.
Through.
He provides a lot of energy.
Well, they don't really have much depth up top, Melbourne City, after Bruno Fornaroli. So if one of them do go down, you'd think that one of them would get a real opportunity. And I believe they're all, I think Rami Nazarin was touted by Daniel Arzani as someone who's even better than him. Now, you've seen a bit of Rami. Is he a guy that you think could, is really that much better than Daniel Arzani?
Look, I would say that they're on the same wavelength.
Okay.
I wouldn't say one is better than the other. I think from what Arzani has shown, though, in the time that's presented to him out on the A-League pitch, he is outstanding.
Yeah.
There's no denying that. And there's no denying that he's got, he basically can change a game. That's at the crux of what Arzani is. He changes a game and we love it. Mm. And I think that Rami does the same. And I know that the team that I saw last season and the season before in the Foxtel National Youth League from Melbourne City included the likes of Denny Jeanreau, Daniel Arzani, Rami Nazarin, Nathaniel Atkinson, James Delianov. And that squad was
And two of them
incredible.
Are now Socceroos. Two of them are now being called up by the Socceroos.
And James Delianov, he'll be the third-choice goalkeeper for Melbourne City.
So has he got a senior contract this season?
Does.
Yep, so he'll be behind Mark Birigidi and Ujan Galekovic this season. Maybe sooner rather than later, we might see him getting a senior cap because we know Galekovic is getting towards the end and Birigidi is still in his prime. But you did some big, big things coming out of Melbourne City, Louise. We just need to see some, silverware to make up for it. And we hope that Melbourne City can start to make those strides because they've got the spending power to bring in some big names. They've got they're starting to build a bit of a brand out here. We just want to see more of it. And their neighbours, Melbourne Victory, are doing all the right things at the moment. At one stage, this transfer window, they'd signed nobody and they'd only really signed Corey Brown and Storm Roo. And a lot of people had worries. They lost against RPO in the FFA Cup and people were saying, is this a doomsday scenario? But then even before that, they'd already announced Keisuke Honda and Ola Toivonen. And now they've brought in these guys and everyone's saying, oh my goodness, these guys could really be game changers, not just for Melbourne Victory, but for the league in its entirety. And I'm very excited. I'm so excited to see Keisuke Honda. As I said, being an AC Milan fan.
I can
fan,
see it. You're jumping out of your seat.
Louise,
boy,
the thing about Keisuke Honda is even when he first signed for AC Milan back in 2014, he was one of my favourite players to watch even before that. And he didn't really live up to the expectation, but when he got opportunities, I remember his last ever game for Milan, he scored a free kick which sent them to the Europa League. And he hadn't played basically all season. He got an opportunity, scored a free kick, and it was unbelievable. And even seeing him score in the World Cup, coming off the bench and playing a role with this young Japanese team was great. And now he's going to be coming here to Melbourne and playing a role with another exciting Melbourne team with a lot of young guys. And I guess we'll wait and see what happens.
Do we have any goals?
Look, if you give me a couple minutes, we'll get those ones up.
And, I know. I can really see that you are looking forward to this weekend's match. And Honda has actually come out and said that he hopes he can inspire the next generation of players coming through the ranks, even in Australia. So he really actually is hoping to provide a lot of off-field benefit, not just, not just quality on the pitch.
And we see what he's doing in his other roles, being, the Cambodian national team manager, general manager, whatever
that
role is.
He'll be managing a few different hats this season.
He's got plenty of other roles within his life. He classifies himself as an anthropologist. He has other roles, a philanthropist, and he's even his Twitter bio, he calls himself a human and a man before he calls himself a football player. So, look, To get you excited for the Melbourne Derby, here are some of the greatest moments here from what we've seen over the 8 years since the Derby started.
Thanks to Fox Sports. That's certainly getting us all very excited for this weekend's upcoming Melbourne Derby. And then, of course, the Sydney Derby will be approaching. Now, Nick, how is our poll on social media going about what is bigger, the Melbourne Derby or the Sydney Derby?
It's going off. It's almost dead even. 66 votes for the Melbourne victory, for Melbourne Derby, 61 for Sydney Derby. Louise, who have you gone? You've gone for Sydney. I believe you're on for the Sydney Derby over the Melbourne Derby. Just...
Look, yes.
Because you've been to both and now you can compare?
No, but that's not saying I don't love the Melbourne Derby. I love going to a Melbourne Derby. Obviously, I live here. But having experienced a Sydney Derby and again, the fact that the Western Sydney Wanderers have such a large supporter base, it just... For me, and given the past crowd numbers and attendances that have gone to the Sydney Derby, that's where... my heart sits.
We've had Ivan come through on the social media talking about some of Melbourne Victory's young guns coming through. He said Seb Pasquale, then Christian Theoharis were the two young guns coming through at the time. But the next cab off the rank is Birkin Kidar, the young midfielder.
Birkin Kidar, yeah.
What do you think of Birkin this season? Can he really make some strides along with another young guy named James Hope? Two guys who probably...
Josh Hope,
sorry for a long day. But those two guys, Josh Hope, Birkin Kidar, those two guys that you think... could potentially really staple themselves this Melbourne Victory lineup. We saw Christian Theoharis was able to do last year. Are they two guys to keep your eye on?
Yeah, look, and I think Melbourne Victory is one of the toughest A-League clubs in the country to break into. We saw, you know, Christian Theoharis did get game time last season, but again, I just think we saw also Pierce Waring, who's now moved over to Japan because
Melbourne Victory before that. You know?
I mean, when you think about it, he had to put Besart Berisha out of a job. Mm. And how easy is that to do?
It's very difficult
to
get in front of Besart Berisha. But what we saw in the Asian Champions League from Waring was very, very impressive.
Well, I agree. And that was a first ever because we actually saw Waring and even Josh Hope start. Mm.
And they're two guys to really keep your eye on for the future. And Pierce Waring's now playing in Japan, I believe.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah, he scored a couple of weeks ago as well.
Yes, for the under-23s. And Josh Hope, he likes to maraud the midfield. He's a quality player. And Birkin, he is quite young. And I've seen him play for Melbourne Victory's youth team. Attacking midfielder, very creative.
Made his debut last year, I think, in the Asian Champions League.
That's it, against Shanghai SIPG. Yep. Got to play against Hulk and Oscar.
Yeah, so he had a bit of a baptism of fire against two of Brazilian's best. And the other one as well is Nick Seti. He's also signed a contract this year. What can you tell us about Nick Seti for Melbourne Victory fans out there?
He's a winger. And, he actually brings back a lot of memories because I saw him at the AIS back in 2015 when he was at the NTC Challenge and representing Victoria's NTC squad. And he scored a few goals there. And now he's just come through the ranks. He's been playing with Melbourne Victory Youth and he's reaped his rewards and been given an A-League contract. And I'm excited to see him debut this season because, again, he's another exciting winger that we can certainly look forward to.
I'm really excited to see because if we get another Christian Theoharis coming through, they're very similar players, I believe, both on the wing, both wingers. But I think if we can get anything like that, Melbourne Victory fans will be licking their lips heading into this season.
Yes, and we do have quite a lot of good wingers around the country, not just at Melbourne Victory, but also, you know, at Perth and even in Adelaide. So it's going to be a very exciting season, Nick. We are going to take a quick break, but plenty more coming up.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
This is Evenings on FNR. And Nick, it's been great tonight. We've had quite a lot of discussion points about the A-League and expansion. And we were just touching on the Melbourne Derby. And I believe we have Lawrence Thomas, who spoke today at training.
I think in regards to the game, it's just starting with very high intensity. The last few years, they've had the better of us in these early games. And a lot of that come down to the early pressure and their early intensity. And we fell behind and we just couldn't get back into the game. So that's probably the biggest one this year, because I guess in all those big games, semi-finals, finals, derbies, you always need to earn that respect to play early on, and you have to fight hard. I assume it's going to be quite fiery, quite intense early on, and then you sort of earn your right to play after that.
That's Melbourne Victory's goalkeeper Lawrence Thomas, who knows the importance of getting off to a good start in the Melbourne derby.
Yes, it's going to be, in my opinion, one of the biggest and most hot Melbourne derbies ever, considering it's always good having it in the opening game. Don't have to wait. No, there's just nothing in between. Like, you just get started with the biggest possible game. And Lawrence Thomas has played in plenty of Melbourne derbies. He knows all about it. He's been a real custodian for Melbourne Victory and was one of the heroes in that grand final win. And I'm sure he'll want to continue his solid form and continue to press his claim for potentially an opportunity at the Socceroos.
And switching our attention to other parts of Australia, the Central Coast Mariners recently announced that their new captain is Matt Simon.
Yes.
And we heard him speak today.
No, it's not a distraction at all. I think, you know, he's been here for a couple of months now. So, you know, everywhere we go with Usain, everyone's talking about him. So we've just been down to business, concentrating on the season, and we're, you know, really looking forward to round one and, you know, putting into practice of what we've been doing at training for the last 12 weeks.
That's the new Central Coast Mariners captain, Matt Simon, speaking to the media a little bit earlier today about Usain Bolt. Now, Usain Bolt potentially on his way to Malta to play for Valletta FC or one of the other clubs down there, and just wondering if it's a bit of a distraction for the players, but he believes it isn't. It's just business as usual for the Central Coast Mariners heading into match day one.
And Matt Simon also spoke about the culture at the Central Coast Mariners.
Being in Sydney for the last 3 years, obviously, you know, the success, as you say, that we've had over the last couple of years is built on hard work, but also how they do things off the field. Obviously, trying to implement some of those things here, and definitely the culture is a big part of that. So we've worked a lot on that this pre-season. The change room's really good at the moment, and we'll be continuing that all year.
That's the Central Coast Mariners' new captain, Matt Simon. And it is very exciting for the Central Coast Mariners. They've obviously signed Ross McCormack. We know how prolific he is at goal scoring.
Yeah, and they've also brought in Tommy Orr as well, the former Socceroo. He was part of an Asian Cup winning side, World Cup side in 2014. It's going to be exciting times up in Gosford for the Central Coast Mariners. I think that they have definitely made the correct signings to get them up back into the top bit of the table after a lot of tough years for them. I'm very excited to see how they go when it comes to the crunch, because I honestly think that the Mariners could be a sneaky for sixth.
Where do you think they'll finish this season?
Eighth. Just miss out. Eighth or ninth for me. I think that they're just a little bit, they're lacking in some areas. I think that where some of the other sides have got some real talents, especially sides like Adelaide United and Perth Glory and Newcastle Jets, even the Brisbane Roar and the Western Sydney Wanderers might just be a little bit ahead of the Mariners.
But what about, given what we know about Ross McCormack? Last season he finished third highest goal scorer.
He only
what about
played
if
half
he,
the season.
Well, what about if he goes on a goal-scoring spree?
Scored a very nice goal on Friday night.
We know he's
night.
Consistent.
Yeah, I'm excited to see how big Ross goes. He's a guy that has had a lot of, you know, great years for the ever in the championship, especially when he's playing his trade for some of the smaller clubs around there. For Leeds United, he had a brilliant golden boot winning season there. He was a big money signing for Aston Villa when they first got relegated from the Premier League, had a lot of issues there with the manager at the time. I think that if he can really have a big season, he's definitely going to help the Mariners a lot. But going back the other way defensively, that's where I'm worried, because I think up top they're stacked. Tommy Orr, Jordan Murray, Connor Payne, Andrew Hull, the list goes on. So defensively, can the Mariners step up and make sure those goals aren't going back in the other way? Because they could score 2-3 goals, but they're leaking them back the other way. It's going to be a worrying sign. But they've got a very good coach in Mike Mulvey. So I think Mariners fans should be optimistic for this season.
Well, time will tell, because they are up against Brisbane Roar this weekend.
That's going to be an exciting game.
On the road.
Yeah, at Suncorp Stadium for those two sides. Two teams who aren't really in the discussion among the top.
But I'm really excited to see what Brisbane Roar can do this season, because they've signed Adam Taggart.
Yes, I think Adam Taggart is a real good signing for them. And if he can recapture some of the form we saw from him at the Newcastle Jets prior to his move abroad, he's going to be right up there in the goal scoring charts this season.
And someone who was right up there in the goal scoring charts in NPL land was Dylan Wenzel Halls. Now,
yes,
they've picked him up. It's his first ever season in the A-League, and he scored over 40 goals in NPL Queensland.
Well, if he can recapture even half of that, he might not be able to score maybe very different opposing defenders he's coming up against.
Obviously.
But playing a role off the bench, if he's going to start, I could see him coming off the bench because they've got very, very good attackers. I think the Brisbane Roar, and they've got Brett Holman and Eric Botiak amongst them. I think that he'll be a nice little player that will be a good alternative to Adam Taggart up top and coming off the bench if they want something else up top. So, look, he's been given his chance. I want to see how he goes, and I reckon he could be a big X factor for the Roar this season.
And even if you have Stephen Mork linking up beautifully with
yes,
Taggart.
Yeah, well, they're two of Australia's, well, starting to get a bit, they're not necessarily the young talents as they used to be, but two of the guys that are starting to really have to hit their strides if they want to be a part of the Socceroos squad. They're both, I think, in a discussion, I think, at least to be...
Adam Taggart has to be.
Adam, well, the striker position is not by any means, you know, it's not, there's not much depth. Apostolos Yanou scored his first goal for Australia against Kuwait, but obviously taking into account who they were playing, Tommy Urich hasn't lit the world up. You know, they've got other guys in there like Jamie McLaren who
didn't
get called
up. Well, that's
it.
Jamie was knocking on the door.
Yeah, but
still
Adam
is.
Taggart has to be in the discussion because I think that if he can hit some good form, there's no reason why Graham Arnold sounded the warning to the A-League players and said, I want to see more. I want to see more of you guys, and I want to see more of you guys pushing and knocking down the door. So if we can get guys like Brillante and Taggart and these guys pushing, it will be great to see more A-League talent really pushing for a spot in Graham Arnold's side heading into the Asian Cup in about... Now, they've got 3 months, so they've got very limited amount of time, but we'll see how they go.
Well, that's it. And Graham Arnold has actually put a lot of the A-League players on notice, saying that he will treat the opening months of the A-League as a 9-round audition for his Asian Cup squad. So
yeah,
that's really exciting. Obviously, you know, he'll be keeping his eye on Riley McGree, Adam Taggart, you know, Lawrence Thomas, as
yeah,
we've touched on, Terry Antonis. They're some of the names who I've been hearing that will be assessed quite closely.
I think you'd be looking at Brendan O'Neill and Josh Berlante in particular, considering how closely Graham Arnold has worked with them two for so long, because now Milo Jednak has moved on. They're two guys that will push. The middle of the park is probably the Socceroos' greatest asset when you've got Aaron Moy, Jackson Irvine, Mas Luongo, Mark Milligan. There's a whole range of talent in the middle of the park, and Mustafa Amini as well. So whether one of those guys can push, and a whole other question, but I think the strikers, the Australian strikers, in particular Adam Taggart, is front and centre at the front of the line looking for a spot. Even Tommy Orr has to be somewhat. He's got the experience. And the wingers position, look, they've got some great wingers of Socceroos. That's, once again, not really going in his favour. And they've got guys like Matt Leckie and Robbie Cruz, who goes under a bit of criticism. Even Dennis Jeanreau, who can play as an attacking midfielder, sort of similar sort of role. Or even Awer Mabil, who scored his first goal for the Socceroos during the week.
And that he did. Now, that was just a beautiful story. Both Awer and also Thomas Deng making their Socceroos debut together. And do you know what? That story went right around the world. Mm. And even former Manchester United player and French international Patrice Evra picked it up. And he took to his Twitter and he said, an amazing story. Don't let anything stop you achieving your dreams. Doesn't matter where you come from. Always try your best and hard work will pay off. Hashtag, I love this game.
Always has to sign off with that. But I think it's great that we've got Awer Mabil and Thomas Deng really. We had a very nice chat yesterday, Louise, about it with Josh Parrish about the beautiful game and how we've got these two guys who have come from an impoverished community, you know, coming as refugees and working their way in, went to the same school together and now find themselves wearing a Socceroos jersey. I loved hearing Thomas Deng after the game say that he told Awer Mabil, you're going to score. And he did. And I have been clamouring for so long that I want to see Awer Mabil play for the Socceroos. And we've got it. He's going to be a very exciting player and a guy who's definitely going to be part of the future for the Socceroos heading in. So what's going to be a very exciting time under Graham Arnold, not just for the Asian Cup, but moving towards the 2022 FIFA World Cup in Qatar. Considering he's only, what, 22? 23?
Something,
he's very
23.
Young. He'd be about 27 when we come around to Qatar, so he'd be right in his prime. And a guy definitely will be looking to start on that right wing in the coming years.
And Nick, I have some questions for you. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you know, there's only two more games that the Socceroos will have in preparation for the upcoming Asian Cup. Is that enough time?
I'm a bit worried about it, considering one is a testimonial for Tim Cahill.
Well, it's not really. He's only getting, what, a 10-minute cameo?
Yeah, but in saying that, Louise, it does take a spot of one of the guys pushing. But look,
that'll probably be at the end of the game.
Yeah,
so I don't
course.
Think you can really
of
read
course.
Into that. I yeah. think you also have to look into whether Graham Arnold and how much rotation Graham Arnold will do for the match against Lebanon and Korea.
I'm worried because it's only going to be three games in total, including yesterday's game, because you need to have a significant amount of time to get this squad ready. And he didn't have the squad at the World Cup. This is a whole new different philosophy under Arnold compared to under BVM. So it's going to be a new squad. Mila Jednak's now moved on. Tim Cahill's now moved on. They've got to find a striker and they've got to find someone who's going to now anchor the midfield with Aaron Moy. Will it be Jackson Irvine? Will it be Mas Luongo? I think that if you're going to be pushing, your time is very limited. You don't have that luxury of having a whole year to push for it. You need to perform, and you really need to perform now. Guys like Troisi, Taggart, such and such, all these other guys that are on the fringes need to perform now. Otherwise, it might just be a little bit too late for them and they'd have to settle for pushing towards Qatar.
Well, that's it. And we know that, you know, Arnie will stick to his usual, you know, structure and formation.
4-3-3, yeah. 4-2-3-1.
Well, yeah, he usually has the two holding midfielders.
Well, Mas Luongo was very good as well.
He was.
Yeah.
And I thought Tom Rogic came to the fore and, you know.
We want to see more of that, don't we?
Yeah.
We really want to. He's probably the most naturally talented player Australia have in terms of attacking midfielder. Like, considering what he can do with the balls at his feet when he's dribbling around players and he's mazing through, he's just masterful. He's unbelievable to watch. And what I've seen, especially what he does in the SPL every week for Celtic, he is such an exciting player. I want to see more of it. We've seen in glimpses for the Socceroos. If anyone's going to be the guy that's going to take Australia to another Asian Cup glory, it's going to be him.
Well, I think there's another exciting midfielder coming up through the ranks, and Graham Arnold has selected him in the squad, Denis Jonro.
Yeah.
He has been applying his trade at Pek Zwolle.
Continues to get minutes.
He is a free kick specialist.
Well,
I don't say that lightly either. I would love to see him get some minutes in the upcoming friendlies, but Nick, we are going to have to leave it there. If you have missed any of the interviews tonight, remember you can head to FNR's SoundCloud to catch up on all of the latest. Nick, it's been great to have your company this evening, and I look forward to getting you back in the studio sometime soon.
Yes, for sure, Louise. It's been a great show, and we'll be back again at the same time tomorrow from 6 with you and George.
Thank you. We are. This has been Evenings on FNR.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR, Football Nation Radio.